Hello, and welcome to another episode of Now Playing. I'm Arnie, and with me, as always, is Marjorie.
Hello.
Marjorie, do you have a cold? Your voice is deeper than usual.
A little bit of a cold.
A little verklempt there?
Yeah.
Actually, that is not Marjorie. This is, with me, Stuart. And Stuart is a longtime movie reviewer from various websites and his own personal reviews. And he is here with me to talk about the newest adaptation of Clive Barker, The Midnight Meat Train. Now, why did we go see The Midnight Meat Train? Let's give a little background about what Stuart and I and Clive Barker all have going on.
I actually, if you can remember the origin, it's beyond me at this point. All that I do know is that I live in Los Angeles now, and I lived in Chicago. And whenever I would get back to home turf here in Springfield, we would just get together and do something Clive Barker. Why did we think that was a good idea?
Well, being into films, okay, we talk about them a lot. And you see a lot of films I don't see.
It's true.
But I don't see a lot of films you don't see.
Okay.
And being that I don't have a lot of people who I could talk about horror movies with and things, you and I would often discuss these horror movies, such as A Nightmare on Elm Street and things. And we'd often get to a point where we would watch a horror movie together. We watched several Nightmare on Elm Streets when you come to town.
It started to feel like a bet, like, you know, I dare you to shave your head. It's kind of what it felt like. I bet you couldn't do Hellraiser 6. We did.
Yes. And it just became a thing where I was into a Clive Barker thing. The toys were coming out. And I kept talking about Hellraiser because there were all the props and things. And so you're like, I haven't seen Hellraiser in a long time. We've been talking about it. Let's revisit Hellraiser. Right.
Yeah, that's one thing we definitely shared from childhood, among many, was a love of all things horror. And we were both reading Stephen King. And then the next level at that time was, if you like King, you'll love Clive Barker. And
King told us so.
Yeah, that was the quote on every Clive Barker book. I think it may still be, actually. but Midnight Meat Train.
Now, this one was not actually done with any Clive Barker involvement. It was just an adaptation of a short story, a very, very short story from the beloved Books of Blood.
When you open them, they're red. There's some kind of play on words involving, you know, you're like a book.
A man is like a book. When you open us, we're red.
Yeah, they're classics. All right. So yeah, Midnight Meat Train. It was probably the 14th Clive Barker effort that we've sat down for. And the first one in theaters in a long time. I don't know why it was in theaters. It got the scantest of releases. It's probably already gone.
Something scandalous happened because it opened in the second run, what's referred to as the dollar cinema, although it's really like a 250 cinema now. And I don't know why it was released straight to there. I thought it was a mistake, but it turned out that was the nationwide release strategy is to make a lot less money on tickets.
Right.
Of course, with their advertising budget, if I wasn't a Clive Barker fan, I wouldn't have known the film was coming out. In fact, our listeners right now are probably like, Midnight Meat what? Midnight Meat Train to Georgia?
Yeah. I love that song. Yeah.
Now, in reviewing this movie specifically, we do have what are technically some spoilers, but we have to talk about them in order to discuss the movie fully. But I think they're non-contextualized to the point where it won't really ruin your movie experience. But if you like to be completely oblivious when you go into a movie, stop listening now.
All right. Well,
the plot of Midnight Meat Train, the original short story was about a guy on a London. Do they have subways there?
Tube. It's the tube.
The tube.
Yeah.
Who falls asleep on the tube, wakes up, and finds that going on the train is a slaughter where a guy is killing all kinds of people, and then he fights the guy, and spoiler alert, he fights the guy, defeats him, then realizes he was killing people to be meat for demons, and then he thus is taken by the demons to be their next vessel and kill people for them. That is the short story. The movie kind of opens on that, because you open with a guy asleep on a train, he wakes up, and I'm like, oh wow, this is like straight out of the short story. And he walks up and there's a guy killing people, butchering them. But unlike the short story, there's no fight and the guy just gets killed. And then we shift to our main character.
The actor's Bradley Cooper. I don't remember who he's playing. But
Leon.
Okay,
Leon. An aspiring artistic photographer.
Sort of. It should be said, we're never quite clear whether he's trying to take crime photos or he's trying to make crime photos high art photos.
I took it as this. He wanted to be an artistic photographer and take the pictures he wanted, but he took crime photos to pay the bills.
Okay. Yeah. And yet the gallery work that he put out there was mainly rapists and muggers and butchers.
And honestly, as a photographer, it was pretty amateurish work.
Yeah. I'm not a photography critic or high art critic, but I wouldn't imagine ever seeing that in a gallery of any kind.
The grain was way too high.
Yeah.
And he was still using a film camera. So obviously there needs to be some suspension of disbelief that he wasn't digital.
Right.
And of course, he's taking all these shots at night without a flash.
I thought that was impressive, too, that he got such maybe that was his talent, that he got such good close-up work from hundreds of feet away in the dark in a place resembling New York, but probably was Toronto.
And extreme close-ups from a great distance with a lens about 3 inches long.
Yeah, he was good in that respect. Good photographer.
He is living with Hadi Maya.
Yeah, who looks like someone you've seen before, but you actually have not. She's never worked before or again.
Well, she's been in like TV stuff and minor roles. Her most notable role so far is being the wife of Ricky Bobby in Talladega Nights.
Okay, I stand corrected.
And in order to up his art, he is told to be—
by Brooke Shields, by the way. She is the voice of artistic integrity. Yeah, Brooke tells him she needs him to go deeper, and she kind of gives a wink, so you know what that meant. And so he goes into the subway, which is literally deeper into the city, and takes some steps. I thought it was really interesting. One of his first subjects he captures is a supermodel who's taking the subway alone at 2 o'clock in the morning, and he saves her from rapists. And it turns out she's the victim of who is it's Vinnie
Mahogany.
Jones. That's his name.
His name is Mahogany. It is said once in the film.
I don't recall that moment.
Vinnie Jones,
yes,
plays Mahogany, who is the Midnight Meat Train butcher.
Mm-hmm. Probably better known as the Juggernaut or from the whole Guy Ritchie movies.
I loved him in Eurotrip.
Uh-huh. Big scary guy.
The F&I ties.
Yeah, I totally buy him in a suit as a killer. That worked for me totally.
He was menacing.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I don't know why he put on a suit to go work in a butcher shop, but that comes later, I guess.
Yes, he dresses in Forrest Gump suits, a fact that is referenced in the movie. They actually
rather cleverly. I thought that was the best joke in the movie, yeah. Life's like a box of chocolates, and then he pulls out the mallet.
Now, after witnessing the attempted rape of the model, he then starts being drawn to this butcher, thinking, what was he thinking? That's my problem.
We're expected to think that he shares some bond with this guy. He sees something in them. Maybe he thought he was going to solve the crime at first, and then slowly his character becomes fixated on him. He can't have sex with his wife without thinking of him. He starts to get scars like him. He's turning into him. Any thoughts as to why that would be, other than the fact that it's a 14-page story being expanded into a two-hour movie?
See, here's what I thought is he initially is following some gangbangers, and he's told that he needs to be in the right place at the right time. He always gets out too soon. He leaves for his own safety. Mm-hmm. He sees a dangerous situation, photographs the danger, but never the confrontation. Okay. So with the gangbangers, he's following them, and then he stays for the confrontation so that he gets that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees Vinnie Jones in that suit. And
Mahogany.
Vinnie Jones, yeah, yes. Mahogany, is this big guy.
Yeah.
He looks much bigger in this movie than he ever did as Juggernaut. Mm-hmm. He looks like a big guy imposing.
Yeah.
And I thought he was following him because you can't just keep taking pictures of gangbangers.
No.
So he needed to find a different kind of thing to make Brooke Shields happy. And so I thought that he thought, this guy's somebody. I'm going to follow him and get another picture, because he's told he needs 3 pictures. It's like a video game. You must go find the 3 pictures to have an art gallery showing. And he got one with the gangbangers. Mm-hmm. I thought that he was following this guy to get picture number 2.
Mm-hmm.
And it was his instinct, and his instinct would be right, because this guy, as it's revealed in the very first scene of the movie, is the Midnight Meat Train butcher.
Right.
And so that's what I thought was going on. But the movie twists that to like where he's obsessed with this guy, as you were saying earlier. He's fixated. He's taking picture after picture of this guy. And it becomes not about what's happening. Honestly, the movie kind of jumped the rails for me at that moment, because I could not determine the character's motivation.
Right.
And it became very external to the character. Whereas for the first half an hour, you're with that character. You understand his motivations. He's your protagonist.
Yeah, I agree. It would have been probably a really excellent 20, 30 minute short in a longer movie. But the movie, about the halfway 45 minute mark, jumps the shark whatever your favorite expression on that is. For me, it was the moment when he's established as a vegan. He eats tofu all the time. And then for reasons never explained, he goes in and starts licking the blood off another man's plate and then orders a steak. I think that crosses a lot of boundaries with me.
Yeah, I could understand him losing his veganism because he's following a butcher.
Yeah.
However, I don't understand where he lost his manners to where he's just reaching on his friend's plate and sucking his own fingers for the steak juice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Does following a butcher make you rude?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wash your hands at least.
Yeah. I mean, I'm surprised the guy kept eating the steak. If it were me and you reached over and started pawing my steak,
I would like, I probably whipped it out and pissed on his tofu is what I would have done. But anyway, regardless, we're off subject and we need to get back on the midnight meat train. Do we want to tell him the end? Because the ending, I feel like, is not a big surprise. They've pretty much...
I don't think we need to say the end.
Okay. All right.
What's interesting about this movie, I went in knowing the short story, and the short story is very fixated on these giant demons that are found. This movie does not portray that at all. It's more like Hostel.
Yeah, I would say that, I mean, it's a Lionsgate film who made Hostel, who made Saw. I think they thought they had another one on their hands here.
It's filmed like it. It's got that gritty, bluish tint. It's almost black and white because it's so washed out.
Right.
And it felt so much like the genre is referred to as torture porn.
Mm-hmm.
And I could very much see that because you've got the scenes with Leon running around taking pictures of gangbangers and it's interspersed. You know, in a good porn movie, you can't go 10 minutes without a sex scene.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interspersed by random people getting killed on the meat train just to keep the interest of the bloodthirsty.
Right.
And
it's not really scary. It's just violent. I mean, I think that's really the definitive for torture porn is that you're just getting something out of watching the sickening details.
And that's what this is.
Yes.
And it is very above and beyond grotesque. Do you think some of the things that happen, they had to be for humor, right? For humorous intent?
I think there are a few things involving eyeballs that, whenever an eyeball is not where it should be, I laugh. I don't know about you.
In Hostel 1, when an eyeball wasn't where it should be,
I laughed.
You know how I have a thing with eyes?
Yeah, yeah.
My rectum was closing up.
Oh.
Yeah, it was not good. Mm. It was pretty bad.
That's a reaction I don't share. I thought it was kind of funny.
I couldn't look, and then but this isn't about Hostel.
No.
But it was a lot like Hostel, because in Hostel, they very carefully laid out all the tools. And here, Mahogany lays out all the tools.
Was it called Mahogany in the book? Because the only Mahogany I know is a Diana Ross movie from the 70s, and that's something you don't want to reference.
I only know my wife's China Hutch.
Okay, all right. Anyway, the violence is gratuitous. You're kind of with it. You're wondering where it's going to go. It doesn't go where you want it to.
Well, when I
waste your time.
When I stopped identifying with the protagonist is when all of a sudden the movie did something smart and kind of shifted focus to his girlfriend, Maya.
Mm-hmm.
And Maya started to investigate why he's obsessed with the butcher. Mm-hmm. She's the only character who I was on board with. I don't know why the butcher's killing people on the train until the very end.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's poorly explained at best.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why he's obsessed with this butcher unless he saw Eurotrip and was a big fan.
Right.
But the Maya character, I completely understand. She's happy. She's a waitress. She's married to an artist. You know, they're both that starving
not
young
married
20s
yet.
Thing.
That was part of it. But
true.
Yes,
they're living with an artist.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand that young 20s poverty mindset where you're taking on the world and you're in love and it's all fresh and new. And then when somebody goes way off the rails like that, you try to pull them back. And she was the character I was with. And they smartly shifted some focus to her.
Right.
But they didn't shift enough to, and they never explain the main character doing what he's doing. So it becomes a head scratcher for the second half of the movie. And if it had just stayed kind of on the same track, even if at the end the whole thing was I kill people because I like to, I would have been more with it.
Right. I agree.
If they could have just explained more why he was hunting, was it that he wanted to really be a crime photographer and he wanted to see the crime? Was it that he felt like he helped the model once before and so he karmically needs to rescue her again?
And
they just given it one thing.
It should be said that most of these things are wasting your time. It's a 14-page story, and it just doesn't. Yeah, a lot of these things are red herrings. It doesn't matter who he was trying to save, what he was taking pictures of before, what she wanted in their relationship. All of that really is to serve a final 5 minutes that look kind of silly, really, when you're watching what's happening. You're like,
that's why I was wondering if it was supposed to be for humor, because certain things I laughed.
Yeah,
I don't know if I'm just very macabre. cop.
Mm-hmm.
Much like every single Clive Barker adaptation, it does not resemble the source material hardly at all.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot think of a single Clive Barker adaptation other than Rawhead Rex where it is true to the source.
Which is one of the only ones we haven't done together. I haven't seen that one. So I'm not going to weigh in on Rawhead Rex. I will weigh on this. If I were going to be traumatized by someone attacking me on an L train, Vinnie Jones is far more scary than Bradley Cooper would be. And sort of the ending in which he sort of takes up the hammer, as it would. It's about the equivalent of watching Ryan Seacrest come at you with a pair of scissors. It's really not going to work, my thought on it anyway.
Yeah, Vinnie Jones was very imposing. All right, we've spoiled the end now. At the end, Bradley Cooper becomes the killer.
Right.
For reasons that we're still not going to explain, because honestly, I don't think I could.
Right, yeah. No, we haven't spoiled the ending. That was telegraphed. Yeah. They let you know that was happening.
Okay. The movie doesn't explain why he does it, so no. Why should we?
Right.
But yeah, they can't do a sequel because Vinnie Jones was this movie.
Mm.
Bradley Cooper was an annoyance in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
If you did this movie again, you'd want Vinnie Jones.
Yeah.
And you can't have him.
No.
Because he's been replaced.
I don't think there'll be another one of these. But then again, I didn't think there would be a Hellraiser 8, and here we are.
Much better than my expectations. I went in with the lowest of low expectations because Clive Barker adaptations, by and large, suck.
Yeah, definitely.
Candyman, which is one of the most acclaimed, It sucks.
Pretty bad, yeah.
Hellraiser, which is one of my favorites, upon watching it with a critical eye, it sucks. Mm. There's these long montages of Kirsty walking under bridges. You're like, what is going on?
Yet again, a short story that they can't, you know, it's quite a jump to take something that is meant to last a couple of minutes, and you got to fill 90 minutes, and you have lots of characters that are just wandering around aimlessly. You know, dream sequences, these are like my pet peeves. When people wake up from dreams where you see scary things, and then none of it has anything to do with what happens. They're doing that a lot on the Midnight Meat Train and in Hellraiser and in a lot of these things. It's just, they're stalling.
And I felt during the first half of the movie, it worked because you had this ominous feeling like this butcher's out there, and you know the protagonist, when he's still someone you can identify with, is going to encounter him, and the murder scenes served as like this ominous reminder. The other thing that bothered me about this movie is it's set in New York, but It is quite obviously not filmed in New York. Anyone who's ever been to New York, even if just once, is going to go, that is not a New York subway.
No, not at all.
They reference New York streets. They put New York streets on the thing.
Mm-hmm.
But this movie was filmed in, at best, Toronto.
Yeah, that's my impression of it, too. So, yeah, it takes you out right there, then and there, right? You know, he's trying to get the heart of the city. They're not even in the city. You know, this is a fake city. So, not going to achieve that, Bradley. You might want to just go back to taking pictures of your tofu. I don't know.
My end review, if you're into torture porn, you probably want to give this one a go. It's the only horror out there right now, but prepare to be scratching your head and ultimately left unsatisfied by the ending. It's like the popcorn you eat with the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Tastes good at the moment. Then after you eat it, about 45 minutes in, it starts to make you sick, and then you just are left unsatisfied.
I don't think that you would be doing any worse for wear if you left the movie and went to whatever was playing in the next theater at the 45-minute mark. And maybe you want to sneak back in the last, for right before the credits. But I think it's probably worth half hour of your time. And unfortunately, it's a 2-hour movie.
Last question. When Bradley Cooper was suiting up for the final showdown, did you find that absolutely hilarious?
It was. It was a Rambo moment. He was like, I'm going to take on a butcher. So he literally is at a butcher shop. He straps in close-ups, you know, the clicking of the belt, the putting the knives in the little belt loops.
And it's like a chainmail butcher apron from the 1800s.
And again, I would like to say this man reminds me of Ryan Seacrest. He's just, there's nothing about him at all imposing. He's going to take on Vinnie Jones? Well, good luck with that.
I would run from Vinnie Jones, but I'd probably stand my ground against Bradley Cooper.
Oh, I can take Bradley. I can take Bradley with all his knives.
That was the other thing, is Bradley Cooper used knives. I gotta say, Vinnie Jones had some good weapons. He had the hook, and he had a big freaking hammer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're writing a horror movie right now, ever since Freddy's glove and Jason's machete, you need the signature weapon. Mm-hmm. And it's gotta be harder and harder to come up with that signature weapon, because I'm down to, if I were writing one, I'd be writing the red pen. Mm-hmm. The red pen is the signature weapon of choice, because everything's been used. Yeah. But to come up with this big freaking hammer, I don't know if this is a real thing used to kill cows.
That is accurate. It is. Because I've killed so many cows. cows in my life. I can tell you honestly.
Only sacred ones.
Yeah, exactly. Which we probably are right now for all Clive Barker fans, but it's pretty weak, guys.
But it was a novel weapon, and it looked imposing on screen. Vinnie Jones carried the movie.
He deserved a better movie than the one he ended up in, and he deserved a better fate than what he got.
Yeah.
But it's better than Candyman, is I think what we're saying here. We've had worse nights with Clive Barker, and so in that respect, it's the smallest of victories.
Thank you for listening to Now Playing. We'll talk to you later. Now Playing is a production of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.